We are back, joined now by two principals of a very fascinating company called Jury Impact. Chris St. Hilaire and Tom Bernthal are the principals of this company. And Chris, tell us in a word what Jury Impact does.
We help lawyers figure out what it is going to sell to a jury prior to them ever walking into a courtroom. You know, the courtroom is the last place in America where you deliver a message before you test it. And more people are tuning out because they're getting bombarded for their attention. And really our goal is to figure out what will grab their attention. How do we put this story, how do we put all the events surrounding this lawsuit into a story that people can understand and that a lawyer can tell?
Tom, jury consultants have been around for quite some time. They advise attorneys from body language, which jurors and from their background they should challenge. But you've taken this to another degree.
Jury consultants traditionally have been clinical psychologists. They've come in and they have said you need a certain type of person on your jury. They base it on race, they base it on age, they base it on gender. We come in with a different approach. We have a marketing-based methodology, which the philosophy is that you should sell to your jury the same way you would sell a product. If you were a fast food company or a network television looking for viewers or anybody else, what you go out there, the messages you go out there with, that is what's going to impact the way they look at your case. So why would you do it any differently than companies have proven an ability to do it in their worlds?
So, Chris, you've been in the communication business. I know you've been in political campaigns and all, and you thought of a new approach to helping attorneys defend. Okay, I guess many of your clients are large corporations that are being sued for a lot of money, and it's worth paying the extra money that your consulting services require to maximize their defense.
There has to be a certain level of exposure to justify our expenses, meaning, you know, if you're getting sued for $20,000, $30,000, it's not worth paying for the type of services we offer. But when your exposure gets up to $1 million or more, as, you know, the level of lawsuits are exploding here in America, you're really seeing the types of services we offer and the unique service that we offer growing at an incredible clip, because it just makes sense to know what people are going to think about your story and the facts surrounding your story before you actually go in and deliver it to a courtroom.
You had a great article in the LA Times a few weeks ago, and it said that out of 40 cases, you only lost one. That's pretty good.
You know, Tom and I have we've been fortunate. We had a methodology when we walked in that we've taken from the marketing worlds and the political worlds where our experience is. Tom was an Emmy award-winning producer with NBC, and you know, we've taken a lot of what we use in our old lines of work and applied them to the courtroom. And we've really had some success there, and we've really been able to take complicated stories and put them in terms that people can understand and people believe.
Let me just quote Chris's quote again. The courtroom is the last place in America where you deliver a message before you test it. And when a lot of money is at stake, that really makes a lot of sense.
It really does. People have a unique ability to sense consistency and inconsistency. They may not understand all of the facts. Lawyers spent 2 years on a case. They may not understand every nuance of the case, but people have a unique ability to pick up on what makes sense to them, what's consistent and what's not. Our goal at Jury Impact is to take a story full of a lot of complicated facts and put it into language and a very simple story that people can understand and believe.
Tom, you brought a clip with you, and I know you hire people to act as faux juries and pay them $50 or $100 a day. And let's take a look at an attorney speaking to a mock jury and tell us what we're seeing.
Sure. All the participants hold dials in their hands, which actually literally let them rate the presentation from a 0 to 100 scale instantaneously. The computer is averaging those scores. So as you see the lines go up there, what you're seeing is that the average score for males and the average score for females is going up based on what that attorney is saying at that moment. You know that that was a compelling line of argument. You'll also see them drop when they use a phrase people don't understand or an argument that people don't find compelling, and you know to remove that from the presentation before they're in the real court of law.
Now, Chris, what would you say that to those who might say, well, this is tampering with the legal system, this is a gimmick, and instead of getting justice, you're just playing to emotion and this and that.
Well, I think the worst thing that can happen in the American jury system is for a jury to not understand the case, for a jury to be confused by a bunch of facts, to not understand how they're pieced together, to not understand who the real protagonist, to not understand who is, if there is a villain in this case, who that is. What we do are take very complicated cases and tell them in ways that are understandable. So if anything, from our perspective, we're putting cases in language that help juries understand what really happened here, and helps them come to a better sense of who's right and who's wrong.
Tom, I know you're not an attorney, but you've obviously had a chance to observe attorneys and juries come in with decisions on cases in which you've been involved. What's your impression of the jury system? Do juries generally get it right?
Juries generally get it right if the lawyers do a good job, but too often the lawyers don't do a good job. There is a huge gap between the way a lawyer thinks, the way a lawyer analyzes, and the way a lawyer presents, and the way a juror walks into a room and with the predispositions that they have. So what we hope to do is bridge that gap. We hope to help the lawyers communicate in a way that is understandable and consistent to the jurors.
We always say, never underestimate the ability of an attorney to make complicated out of the simple. And so what we're doing
is... As an attorney, I can appreciate
you. You have a very simple story. Over the course of 2 years, can get very complicated between discovery and depositions and interrogatories. What we have to do is take all of those complicated facts and make them put them into simple terms.
And your approach uses what resonates with the people rather than necessarily the best legal argument. I found that a very fascinating quote.
Lawyers get so immersed in both legalities and into the case facts that they can no longer think about it with, they can no longer put fresh brain cells on it. They can no longer look at their case with fresh eyes. And so they've read so many legal law books. There's so much value in a legal education, but what it does is it makes you not think like a normal person anymore, not think like a juror.
Oh, God.
And
I'm in trouble.
The law, really, in the end, when you're in a courtroom, has very little to do with the law. Yeah. The law has to do with what people perceive as fair. And in the end, they don't know every nuance of the legal system. No one really does in this day and age. It's too complicated. But what jurors rule on, who jurors award to, are the ones that persons they think were wronged, or what they think is fair. The three most popular words in the English language are choice, fairness, and accountability. At any given time, we're helping find two of those three words.
Okay, we'll be continuing this fascinating discussion, but first we take a pause for these messages. We're back continuing this fascinating discussion with Chris St. Hilaire and Tom Bernthal of Jury Impact. Tom, you are an Emmy Award-winning NBC News producer. Give us a sense of what that life is all like.
That is an amazing way to make a living and no way to live. It is. They absolutely own you. You've got a beeper on and you're gone on a moment's notice to the most interesting places in the world to write the most interesting people's stories. It is something that I'm thrilled to have done for 4 years and can't believe some of the things I've seen, but I'm now ready to live my life instead of theirs.
But Chris, this life is no easy slouch either. I read that you were in 9 cities and 18 focus groups in 2 weeks before Christmas. So you guys are on the move.
We have kind of a sick contest going where we try and see who can qualify for executive platinum on American Airlines first. And it's really no way to live, and it's something not to compete about. But we do it anyway. He's got me beat 2 years in a row, but I'm going to get him this year.
Yeah. So there's no easy solution to doing hard work in whatever you're doing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you got to go to wherever the juries are in order to get this right. So we end up in those jurisdictions.
So you get to see a lot of the country with a lot of different kinds of folks. So that's kind of interesting.
You get to see a lot of the country, but the thing that's really interesting is that you end up in rooms of people, of 12 people on any given night, talking about a subject that you would never talk to those people about in any other circumstance. So you're with 12 people in the middle of Tennessee talking about something having to do with potential medical malpractice, and the next night you're talking about something that happened on a cruise line in Miami. And to interact with these people in conversations that are so much deeper than surface level on a regular basis in different elements of the country really gives you a sense of how incredibly diverse this country is.
And people are really different, but people are really the same. We've gone from Nashua, New Hampshire one night to focus groups in McAllen, Texas, which is right down at the tip of the triangle there, right on the border of Mexico. And people, they use different language to describe human events. They use different, they live in different circumstances. They may have slightly different worldviews, but in the end, it really always comes back to consistency and fairness.
You know, I teach ethics as well as law at Long Beach State, and I firmly believe that there are ethical principles that transcend geography, time, space, and these principles are principles, and I think fairness is one of them, and I'm sure you see that in your work.
And while two-thirds of people get a notice that they've got to be on a jury and they dread it, two-thirds of people say, oh, my God, I've got jury duty. How am I going to get out of it? But when they get into the room, once they're going to commit the time, what they really want to do is what is right. And people come at that with completely different ideas of a foundation of what makes up right and wrong. But that is what you need to appeal to, is that sense of rightness.
Where do you see this going, Chris? I mean, you obviously have taken jury selection to a new level with this kind of polling and analysis. What's the next step?
To cut down on plane flights, one. Two is, you know, how do we create an approach that utilizes our skills but allows us to grow at the same time without ever really sacrificing quality? So there are some concepts that we've applied here in the courtroom, whether, you know, we're in Nashua or whether we're in Phoenix. And the goal for us is to help people who are good at this type of thing get better and understand how to do it without us.
Well, you have political background. I know you ran a state Senate campaign. What you're learning here obviously has direct applicability to political campaigns.
Yeah, and vice versa. I mean, the training that I received in politics is really what we apply here to the courtroom. Instead of trying to influence 500,000 people, we're trying to influence 12. But the same dynamics apply. You have a certain number who oppose you. You have a certain number who are generally tending to favor you. The goal is to influence those in the middle.
I read in the LA Times article that based on your analysis that none of the arguments worked that your client was trying, the attorney decided to settle.
There are times when this is used as a settlement tool, and it's used as to help lawyers and their clients eventually determine what they need to do before they get to a courtroom. Because if the facts aren't on your side, the last place you want to learn that is when a jury has a hold of your future.
One of the fundamental questions we're trying to answer is this winnable? And if it is, then how? But that's really the second question that we answer.
You said in one case the key witness had an accent that the jury could not get over, and therefore you advise settling. How can an accent impact the case?
Well, it's sort of fundamental to our entire philosophy, which are predispositions. Some lawyers call them juror preloads, are what drive everything that you see and look at. My worldview, the experiences that I've had, drive every single fact that comes into my brain and helps determine how I'll process
so
it.
So even if his client had a meritorious defense, if the key witness had an accent and your polling indicated that accent was a deal killer, you tell the attorney that.
If the predisposition is so bad about a certain type of person that you can't get a jury to properly assess the facts or fairly try and understand all the information, then you have an obligation to tell your client.
So it's important to know that, and you would never know that by reading briefs and pleadings and discovery.
We've all seen in the movies and on television when some lawyer says something to a jury and the judge and somebody objects and the judge says, oh, strike that. Don't consider that.
Give me a
break.
Can
you imagine a juror not considering that information?
Sure.
No matter how much a judge tells a jury, base this simply on the facts, the jury is going to do what they think is right. And so unless you can figure out how your case fits into that rightness, you don't have a chance.
We just have a minute or two left, and this may be an unfair question, Chris, but your view of the American legal system.
I think that, you know, as flawed as it is, it is the best system in the world. And I think that, you know, when you give jurors an opportunity to decide fairness, they live up to that responsibility by and large. They may get a fact or two wrong. They may not understand all of the legal nuances. But when you have 12 people deciding whether or not something is fair and doing their best to achieve that result, then I think it's a pretty good system.
Tom, I know you've restricted your practice to civil cases. Any thoughts about moving this into the criminal realm?
It's definitely something we've talked about. Fortunately, fortunately or unfortunately, most of the people who are involved in the criminal justice system are moved through there pretty quickly without fair representation. And we've spent some time talking about different ways that we can help out maybe in our future.
And we've been asked.
Yeah, so it's on the table for future consideration.
Correct.
Thanks so much, guys. Fascinating show. Great guests. Thank you for joining us. Be with us next week for the next edition of Straight Talk. Good night, everyone.
Straight Talk has been brought to you by Southern California Edison and other fine sponsors. Support the quality sponsors who support Straight Talk.